This morning, we want to continue to dive into Psalm 23, but I want to begin with telling you a story about something happened as I was growing up. And I'll tell you the story, and then I'll explain it a little bit, the background behind it as I unpack this part of Psalm 23. As I was growing up in high school, I'd come home from school, and there'd be a bunch of new shirts on my bed. And I'd say to my mom, "So, Mom, what's the deal with all the new shirts?" She says, "I just felt like you guys needed some new shirts, my brother and I." And I said, "Well, that's really nice." But what she didn't know was at the same time she was buying all these new shirts, my dad was borrowing money from me to pay off the credit cards that she was building up. Of course, I didn't have the heart to tell her, and neither did he. So on his dime, I enjoyed the new shirts while I helped him pay for it. And there was a reason why she was doing that, which I'm going to share with you in a little bit. But as we look at the 23rd Psalm, once again, I want to remind us there's one who wants us to hear his voice. And the reason is because if we hear his voice, when we hear that voice, we don't care about hearing anybody else's voice. We face continual temptation, don't we, to hear other voices. And we can say all we want that we just want to hear that voice, but there's all these distractions, there's all this noise in the atmosphere trying to distract us from hearing his voice. Somebody said it's hard to hear the voice when the accuser is constantly speaking. He's telling us, get more knowledge, do something spectacular for God's sake. Make something of your life or throw yourself off a building. Our lives are bombarded by this voice of the accuser. From the moment we're born, he says, we're coaxed into more. Our progress is never good enough. Our brains are never smart enough. Our passion never big enough. This is the voice of our making, or I guess it could be the voice of our unmaking. And the people around us mean well, but their words are often tainted by their own accusations, their own voices they're hearing, the strongholds of doubt and regret and shame that shrink their lives into rigidity or chaos. We grow up believing that this voice is the only voice. This must be the way the universe communes with us, so we search for God through the filter or within this accuser's voice. And here's the deal with my mom. My mom was raised in a household of 8 brothers and sisters. Her father was an alcoholic. And any time that they made money, once she got into high school, as she was making money, all of the money she made went to her father to support his drinking habit. He was never really physically abusive, but he was always very emotionally abusive. And so she told my brother and I, this is probably not the best reason to get married, but at the age of 18, my mom and Dad got married because she couldn't wait to get out of the house. It was escape. And thankfully, they survived being married for almost 60 years before she passed away. But she was buying shirts for me because she was hearing a voice. Now, I don't want you to hear what I'm not saying this morning. I'm not talking about prosperity. I'm not talking about material things. But I'm talking about hearing the voice of God through the filters that we all carry. She was hearing what she should do for my brother and I through a filter system that came from the accuser. She was coming from a stronghold that was part of her past, and she was trying to hear God's voice to bless us. And she was blessing us, but it was for the wrong reasons. It was for the wrong reasons because it was coming from the wrong source. And she needed to have a different mentality because she had a mentality that I would call a poverty mentality. And again, don't misunderstand me. I'm not talking about poverty and wealth in the sense of more money or less money or whatever. But she had this mentality of scarcity. She was afraid there never would be enough because that was what was built into her thinking. That's what she learned. That's what she grew up with. There would never be enough. And so she was determined that her two boys would never experience that lack, that there was never enough. She wanted to make sure we always had supply. And you and I can be fearless if we live out of an abundance mentality. But we end up losing our fearlessness, and we start losing our courage and our boldness if we are relating to life out of a scarcity mentality, out of a poverty mentality. And there's a solution to the problem that's right in the very first verse of Psalm 23. And we never fear that there will not be enough if we hear his voice, and because there are certain aspects of our lifestyle that make us fearless. The shepherd of Psalm 23 is the only voice that will give us all we ever want or need. Let me say that again. The shepherd of Psalm 23 is the only voice that will give us all we ever want or all we ever need. There are other voices that will give us some of what we need. There are other things that will give us some of what we need. They will never give us all of what we need. So I want us to look again at Psalm 23. It's not working, Doug. Okay. Go back to Psalm 23. There. All right. You got it? Okay, thank you. So let's just say the first three verses together. Would you read them with me? The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Now, you can stop. But I want to encourage you to keep reading this psalm over and over in the next few weeks. This psalm reflects the nature of God. It reflects how radiant his sufficiency is. The radiant sufficiency of the shepherd who provides life without lack. God is this reality of so much that's so much greater than anything we ordinarily see around us or come to deal with in human life. He simply has no comparison. We're blessed to live in a world where there is a fully self-sufficient, generous God who wants to provide what is best for us and loves us more than we could ever imagine. You realize this morning that he loves you more than you can even imagine. He loves you more than you love yourself. He cares for you as a shepherd who knows when you hurt. He knows when you're afraid. He knows when you're in need. And he knows when you're relating to life out of a poverty mentality instead of out of the abundance of heaven to earth. There's some great videos of a shepherd, a real live shepherd that tells these great stories. And I want to have you watch one of those right now.
Hey gang, this is Ray Carman coming to you from over here at Namrack Farms. This morning we had a beautiful new set of twins, as you see right here behind me. This is their mama. They're both together, a little boy and a little girl. But I want you to notice something. See what Mama's doing right there? Somehow this morning, before I got here, Mama got separated from this little girl. And now Mama has decided to reject that little girl. So that means, guess what? The shepherd gets to take his little lamb home and raise it, which is going to make my little son Truett really happy because he wanted to bottle raise a lamb. But I saw a lesson in this, and I want to share it with you. Sometimes in our life, someone who's really important to us, who means a lot to us, who we think our survival depends upon that person, they reject us. They turn their back on us, and they leave us alone. They won't let us have the milk that we think we need. They won't feed us. They won't groom us. They won't even clean us off. This little lamb is nasty. She's been born for half a day, and her mama hasn't cleaned her off. And as you see, she's butting her, and now she's afraid of her. And oftentimes we wonder, why did that person who was so important to me, did they leave me? Why did they abandon me? Why are they hurting me? Why are they rejecting me? Maybe just maybe, It's because the shepherd wants to pick you up and take you home, clean you up, and feed you himself. And in that way, you will form an intimate, close relationship with the shepherd. I've got a lamb right now that we started bottle feeding last year. He's now a year old, a big ram. He's like a big puppy dog. I come in the field, he runs to me. He loves me. He wants to be with me. My daughter, who did most of the feeding, man, he is excited when she shows up. So I'm looking forward to raising this little girl right here, because I know when I get done, she'll run to me. She'll love me. She'll stick with me no matter what. So maybe it's just that when someone's left you or abandoned you that you think life is terrible. Maybe it's just because the shepherd wants to pick you up and spend some intimate time with you. Hey, that's a lesson for you today. I hope you have a great one. We'll see you soon.
When a sheep is lost or hurt, a shepherd doesn't wait for them to find their way back to the flock. A good shepherd seeks their lost sheep. A good shepherd knows their sheep's worth and goodness that's not contingent upon their capacity to find their way back home. A good shepherd loves his sheep because that's what he does. And the secret to a life without lack is faith in God and in God's full capacity and willingness to meet all of our needs and even more. Think about what Jesus said in Luke 12:32. Fear not, little flock, for it's your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. It is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. He doesn't resent it. He doesn't grow weary. He doesn't grow impatient. But out of his good pleasure, he gives us the kingdom. Peter, who learned a lot about the shepherd, said in 1 Peter 2:25, "For you Christians are straying like sheep, but have now returned to the shepherd and the overseer of your souls." From the time we were little to the stage of life that we were in, no matter where we're at this morning, if we're one of the high schoolers or if we're someone that has less years ahead of us than we have behind us, he's still overseeing our life. And how do I know if I'm living out of an abundance mentality where the shepherd is providing all that I want or all that I need? Well, to help us with this, I'd like you to get your bulletin, and if you don't have one, please raise your hand. I want to get them to you right now, because I'm going to do something this morning. For those of you that always are afraid of tests, I'm going to give you the answers ahead of time. So in your bulletin, you should have five different blanks or five lines with blanks in them. So here is the answers. I am seeking him for wisdom. I am seeking him for wisdom. I am hungering and thirsting for righteousness. I am relinquishing control. I am experiencing supernatural abundance. And I'm confident of his presence. I'll leave all of those up here for just a minute. They're right there. If you look up here, I'll leave them up there for just a minute. And as long as you all promise not to check out now that you have the answers. So let's look at the first one. I'm seeking him for wisdom. And let me highlight some things, try to go through these things quickly. James chapter 1, verses 2 through 9. Go on to, I'm seeking him for wisdom. And then go to the passage, James 1. Right in the middle of that passage, in verse 5, it says, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who generously, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given to him. I cannot believe how many times I've had to kick myself in the rear end because I had a situation and I stressed over it. I lost sleep over it. I kept trying to figure out what to do. And it's like the shepherd was saying, hello, hello, just ask me what to do and I'll tell you. If any of you lacks wisdom, if the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not lack, and fill in the blank, I shall not lack wisdom. Why? Because he says, he promises, out of his good pleasure, if I ask him, he will give us wisdom. He gives wisdom to us all of the time. And how many times have you had something happen? In fact, I had it happen even this morning, where you think, wow, that's a really good idea. Why didn't I think about it? And then you realize it wasn't your idea. It was the Holy Spirit dropping this idea in your head to make you look smart. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask. And this increases our trust in his ways. Our capacity to say, I lack nothing, someone said, is formed by the presence of the shepherds with whom we have belonged. It's the shepherds in your life, people in roles of caregiving, leadership, and authority, whose presence have primed your nervous system towards tight-fisted fear or open-handed joy. If that's your experience, then sometimes it's difficult for you to believe that you can ask him for wisdom. And my prayer for all of us this morning is we can let those things go and know that we serve a father and a shepherd who doesn't say when we ask for wisdom, how could you be so stupid? Some of you heard that from your dad and your mom. Some of you heard that from a sibling. There you go again, just being so dumb. You will never hear that from the Father. You will never hear that from the Good Shepherd. When are you going to finally get with it, program, Trinity? When are you going to finally figure this out? He has unlimited patience for us, thank God. And that's why we continually turn to the Shepherd for wisdom. The second thing that needs to happen in order for us to experience the abundance that comes from the Shepherd is to always be in a posture of hungering and thirsting for righteousness. Remember what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Why? Because they will be filled. So do you want to get filled up, church?
Yes.
Let me try that again. Do we want to get filled up?
Yes.
All right, then the condition, the predicate, is to be hungry and thirsting for righteousness. Starving for his way, looking for his pathway, so that we are filled with him. It increases our desire for more. And when we're truly satisfied in him, there's nothing that satisfies us more. We need to believe that he wants to give us more. And he is actually the one, only one, that can give us more. We all realize that anything that we can turn our hearts to, education, really good books, whether it's an addiction to something that we think satisfies, none of those things will ever completely satisfy. They'll always come up just a little bit short. But the thing with the Father is he never comes up short. In fact, he always goes over the line and says, oh, you know what? You enjoyed that? Here, have a little bit more. It's like, I can't take any more. Well, you can't take any more here. Here's some more. As a father, one of the funnest things with my kids is the times when you can say, well, let me tell you this quick story. Kathy knitted this blanket for our granddaughter Peyton, who's turning 14 Tuesday, right? And I forget all of the story. I should have Kathy tell it. But her older sister Riley's had this knitted blanket for years. And we got to watch this video on Saturday of Peyton opening up the present from her grandma. And she takes the box and she opens the box and she holds up the blanket and she says, this is one just like Riley's. Thank you, Grandma. Thank you, Grandma. Now, Grandma didn't go, oh man, I should have never done that for her. She's going to be spoiled and she's going to think that, she's going to expect that all of the time. No, what do grandmas do? Grandmas love to spoil kids, don't they? I mean, aren't we all grateful for grandmas? I remember my grandmother, when I was growing up, all of our cousins would be at the house in Santa Cruz, California. And we'd all wake up at all these different times in the morning. You know how many breakfasts my grandma would make? Sometimes 8, 9 different breakfasts. French toast, pancakes, eggs, oatmeal. It didn't matter. She just would make whatever anybody wanted. It didn't matter how long she had to stay in the kitchen because she loved to supply. And so we hunger and thirst for righteousness because he loves to give us the right pathways. The next thing is we learn to relinquish control. I am relinquishing control. For that, we remind ourselves of the story in Genesis 22 when Abraham had to give up control of his son. It says, and Abraham said to his young men, stay here with the donkey, and I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you. When they came to the place of which God had told him, Abraham built the altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac, his son, and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. And Abraham reached out his hand and he took the knife to slaughter his son. Talk about giving up control. And we know, obviously, the ultimate act of that is the Father giving up control of his son, Jesus, for us. But when we learn how to give up control, it increases our dependence on his immediate provision. Some of you are holding on to things too tightly. Some of you are holding on to fear too tightly. Some of you are holding on to anxiety too tightly. Some of you are holding on to the future too tightly. God's in control of the future. God's got this. God knows what's coming. God understands what you're going to need in the circumstances that you are facing. And sometimes that's hard to believe, isn't it? Somebody wrote this little poem that I'd like you to see. It says, God who dreamed up autumn, grant us imagination to trust our lives can grow like trees that never fear losing their leaves. Think about, here we are in springtime. It was so beautiful this morning to look out and see the trees washed with a fresh outpouring of rain like they got last night. But we all know what's going to happen in a few months. Those trees are going to lose all those leaves. And we are the same way. There are things in our life we hang on to, ministry opportunity, gifts and callings, and we go, I've got to protect this. This is mine. I can't do this. You know what? The coolest thing is happening right now. Here we are. My kids can't figure it out because they keep asking me when I'm going to retire. I can't figure it out either. But the craziest thing is happening because my brother and I were taught by my mom and dad a long time ago to give up control and to let God do what he wants to do. So I told you this, I think, a few weeks ago, but my brother retired from being a school superintendent, and he was a minister of music, a worship minister at a Church of God for 25 years in Tulare, California. He calls me a few weeks ago, and he says, hey, what do you think about this? I decided to get ordained in the Church of God. He's 66 years old. It's like, okay, I can't criticize him. It's whatever. And then he was asked, well, when are you going to pastor a church? And I said, well, what do you mean? So they just sold their house in Visalia, California, and they're buying a house in Santa Maria because they got asked to be transitional pastors and decided to be permanent pastors at a church in Santa Maria. Isn't that the coolest thing? It's crazy. Because we gave up control. Who cares? Who cares? Because God's in control of it anyway. And so we let him lead us into those places, and we're in this battle to turn our dependence away from God to other things that satisfy and provide for us. And we live in a world under the care of a holy, good God with unlimited power who lacks nothing and intends only good for all of creation. And the reason there's so much lack and evil is because of humanity and the devil still at work. And we know the enemy, the accuser, has the power of death and the power to separate people from God and to use death as an instrument for repressing and managing human beings. We are all fighting the same temptations. The temptations that Adam and Eve faced. It's good for food. It's pleasant to the eyes. It's desirable to make one wise. the desire of the flesh, the desire of the eyes, the pride of life. But there's one named Jesus Christ who faced every one of those temptations. Turn the stones into bread. Jump off the temple. Turn political power into glory. And he says, I don't have to control any of those things. I'm going to let my Father control all that's happening. In fact, he let control go so far that he hung himself, let himself be hung on a cross, and he let go of control, and you and I are all benefiting from that this morning. It's our benefit to let him have full control. And also, besides all that, we're experiencing supernatural abundance. How do we know that the shepherd is our focus? How do we know that we're being filled, that we're not lacking in what he has for us? We're experiencing supernatural abundance. John 10:10, the thief comes only to steal and destroy, kill and destroy, and I came that they might have life and have it more abundantly. We saw from the video that sheep obviously cannot voice out their needs. Yet the shepherd naturally knows the needs of each and every animal in the flock. I'm trying to shepherd this flock the best I can. But it's impossible for me and for our staff to know every need that you have. But thank God, all I am is an under-shepherd. I'm an under-shepherd to the great shepherd. He knows every one of your needs. Some of you are going through stuff right now. I mean, I told Kathy, I said, every week there's something that someone's facing with health. I guess that's part of the problem with us all being a bunch of old people around here. I can say that because I am one. But the reality is we know that God has things in his hands, and he will pour out supernatural abundance even in the midst of situations that are difficult. In Matthew 6, 7 and 8, he says, when you pray, do not heap up empty phrases as the Gentiles do, for they think it will be hard for their many words. Do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask him. Isn't that crazy? Even before you thought about it, he already knew what you needed. He already knows some things you need and you haven't thought about it yet. It's not even in your brain, in your logic, and he's already worked it out. And that goes back to the whole control thing. You know, we're doing this and we're doing this, and he's going, I've got this if you just check in and ask me for some wisdom. If you think about the life of David, Psalm 95, come, let us bow down and worship. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker, for he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture, the flock under his care. Psalm 2, verse 9, you will rule, the shepherd will rule them with an iron scepter. What I love about the youth learning about spiritual warfare is I hope you guys understand that you have a shepherd that is ruling with an iron scepter, and he's going before you, and every time the accuser comes to try to take you out, he says, get out of my way. They belong to me. It's the shepherd that protects the lambs from the wolves that want to take them out. And any good shepherd, including this shepherd, I will fight to the death if anyone tries to take out any of these sheep. That's what a good shepherd's supposed to do. Philippians chapter 4, verse 19, and this same God who takes care of me will supply all your needs from his glorious riches which have been given to us in Christ Jesus. Have you ever thought about what glorious riches means? I mean, when do glorious riches run out? I mean, you just can't get your head around that. And just meditate on this just for a moment. He supplies my needs according to his riches in glory. We were in the grocery store in Elmer yesterday. And it was such a small little thing. It took me a minute. Kathy was faster at this than me. But there's a little boy in front of us. He had this, one of those tall cylinders of Cheetos and a Snickers bar. About 9 years old, right? And I started a conversation with him. I said, is that your lunch? He goes, no, I just getting it for a snack. I said, okay, those are some of my favorite. And so he went to pay for it. He had a credit card. He had like a debit card of some kind. And he goes to pay for it, and the clerk says, I'm sorry, but it's $4.83, and you don't have enough money. And I'm like, oh, that's too bad. And Kathy's nudging me like, I have to. But I got the credit because I gave him a $5 bill, and then the clerk said to thank me for the helping him out. Kathy says, you're welcome. But that, it's such a small little thing, but a random act of kindness like that, God does that for us all of the time, everybody. He's doing that for us all of the time. All these random acts of kindness out of his riches and glory. Oh, you need that? Here. You need this? Oh. And then, finally, I am confident of his presence. Deuteronomy chapter 31, and I won't read the whole passage, but it says, Moses summoned Joshua and said to him in the sight of all Israel, be strong and courageous. And at the end of the passage, it says, he will be with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed. Remember that Moses was the one that said, God, I'm not going if your presence doesn't go with us. Everybody, let's make a commitment as a church. We're not going anywhere unless the presence of God is going with us. It may sound like a really good idea, but if his presence isn't there, we ain't going. And this increases our courage to go against all odds, because if his presence is there, I'll do anything. And there are shepherds that generate this fear of lack and wanting instead of courage that we need to move forward in the journey. They say, well, I've got a better idea. You know, you don't need that presence stuff. You don't need his presence. You know, you can do this. You can work it out. You can just, I was talking to somebody last week. You know, you can just do sermons like TED Talks, right? You can just do things in a simple way. You can just run the church like a business. And I'm not against leadership ideas and all those kinds of things. But if leadership ideas don't have presence on leadership, then we don't do it. And the rest comes because the shepherd has dealt with fear that we have and the friction that exists sometimes between us. You all know, I was talking to somebody about this morning, that the church was a really good idea until God added people. And, you know, you all can blow God's presence faster than anybody. We can be having this amazing time of worship, and then somebody has some other idea of how it should be done. And then, phew, there goes God's presence. We just do that to each other for some reason. But the shepherd is the one, when he invades our presence with his presence, it changes everything. There's a principle that I use in counseling. I've shared it before probably, and I'll share it again. I always share with couples in particular a triangle of three words: feeling valued, feeling safe, and feeling heard. And if in any relationship, whether it's a husband-wife, whether it's a mother-daughter, whether it's brothers and sisters in Christ, if I feel valued by you, and you feel valued by me, and I feel heard by you, and you feel heard by me, and I feel safe with you, and you feel safe with me, that invites his presence, because then there's trust. And we can get through anything. We can get through disagreements. We can get through seeing things from a different perspective, because what controls our relationship is his presence, not whether we always agree on everything. When you follow Jesus, you follow the great shepherd who gives provision and always has enough at his disposal. So I invite you to look with me at John chapter 10, verse 7 through 16, and we're going to finish in just a few minutes. And it says, Jesus again said to them, truly I say to you, I'm the door of the sheep. Of all who come before me, all who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they might have life and have it abundantly. I'm the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he's a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I'm the good shepherd. I know my own and my own know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice, so there will be one flock and one shepherd. If you had the opportunity to read the Chronicles of Narnia by C.S. Lewis, there's this one scene where Aslan, who's a lion in the story representing Jesus Christ, he's talking to Lucy, one of the main characters. And Lucy's had all these different encounters with Aslan. And at one point, she says, Aslan, you're bigger. And he says, that's because you're older, little one. And not because you are, I am not. But every year you grow, you will find me bigger. I would say something this morning to the high schoolers. You guys listen up to this. There are people in this room that have walked with the shepherd for a long time. And the God they see is larger than the one you see right now. Because they've grown older and they've seen him come through time after time after time. Some of you know what I'm talking about? And so if I were a high schooler again, I'd be hanging out with these old people. I'd be hanging out with them and saying, how have you made it through these times? I need to know what to do to make sure I'm hearing the voice of the shepherd. Because I want to walk in a life of abundance. Because we see him larger than life, we don't end up being dumb sheep. Instead, he's our shepherd, and we don't lack. We live as a temple of the Holy Spirit. We live as priests. We live as sons and daughters and children and heirs of God. We live as the body of Christ. We live as warriors for him. We live as jars of clay holding this precious treasure of the Holy Spirit. And we live as fountains of living water. I want us this morning to finish by singing a song that kept going through my mind all week long as I started preparing. And I asked Josh if we could do it. It's an older song that many of you will recognize. But it ends with these words. This is the chorus. You're all I want. You've all I have ever needed. You're all I want. Help me know you are near. It starts by saying, draw me close. Never let me go. I lay it all down again to hear you say that I'm your friend. Brothers and sisters, every one of us have things that we have picked up that the shepherd has said, why are you holding that? Why are you picking that up again? What he's saying to us this morning is you can't hold what you're holding on to and hold on to me at the same time. So he wants you to let it go. He wants you to let those things go so that you can embrace him with all that you have in your being.